the extent of control you have on biology is very less compared to the control you can get on digital mechanical systems, let's say. So you need to acknowledge that when you start this kind of process, and accept that your installation is not going to be as reliable. So for example, like we can store 5 byte message or like word in this device, basically. There's going to be glitches if you consider, if you really want to make an analogy with digital storage. Basically, all of the algae are not going to respond to your signals and that kind of things. I think it's the beauty of it, actually. But
in this episode of the Creating New Spaces podcast, I'm talking with Michael Sedbon. Michael's work explores digital network technologies and systems and their convergence with non-human intelligence, things like plants, unicellular organisms, insects, and bacteria. In this interview, we're talking about his CryptoBean installation. Michael, welcome to the Creating New Spaces podcast. What's the experience of cryptographic beings like for someone?
Well, first, thanks for having me. For someone, this installation, this installation is a 3 meter high tower that is composed of a stack of 5 levels. On each of these levels, you have a row of 6 bytes that are 6 bits that are made of marimos, so it's like algae balls that are sitting inside glass vessels. And so these algae balls have this very special property that when they are exposed to light, they are making photosynthesis. And in this process, they produce tiny gas vesicles that are visible to the naked eye. And when there is enough of this gas vesicle, they start to float. And so when there is not enough, they sink, basically. So the idea is that they have 2 states. They can either be high or low. And like everything that has 2 states and that you can control and read, you can use that to read and write digital information. So basically, this installation is a storage device, very much like a hard drive or a USB stick. They can store up to 5 bytes of information, but instead of having it on transistors or silicon-based media, you have it on algae media. So what it's like to experience it, basically it's a robotic installation that is composed of this tower I was talking about, surrounded by robot arms that can move around. And on these robot arms, you have lights that can turn on or off an algae bit.
There's something sort of really beautiful around these very slow algae moving up and down. It must be the slowest storage system on the face of the earth.
I mean, I haven't made a comparative studies, but yes, I think it's a pretty slow one. It takes half an hour to move a bit, roughly. So yeah, it's not very fast. The robot itself, though, is moving at like human speed, let's say. So there's a lot of moving parts. So the experience of the work itself is not occurring at the speed of algae movements. But yeah, there's definitely a statement about that. Basically, the idea is around digital technology, there's this myth and narrative. It's not a myth, it's true, it's very fast. But basically, there is a story about things that are instantaneous and unlimited. And in this installation, I think this is also the kind of things I wanted to show. So if you change the medium and you move towards the like bio-based medium, there's new constraints that appear, and time and space are speed. And yeah, space, let's say, are part of this constraint. So in this case, the speed limit of this installation or of this technology is the carrying capacity of biology in terms of information processing. So how fast can your cells, or in this case, organisms, process information from its environment and react to it and have like a phenotypical change?
Yeah, see, it conceptually it sort of made me think about different times and different times we experience things in, and different sort of like computational time is always thought about being very fast, and body time is sometimes slower, and nature time is different. The concept and idea for this piece, did you start with an idea, or did it start from actually the behavior of the algae?
Like, okay, the answer to this is a bit twofold. So basically, the idea of working with this organism came from a residency I did at the Vrije Universiteit in 2019 in the lab of Raoul Frese, and thanks to Sandrine Dahen, who I was working with, and through conversation, she mentioned this organism and that it was pretty cool because it can it can float when exposed to light. And this sat in my head for a few years, basically. And then more recently, in 2022, I was part of a workshop that was organized by Raphael Kim, who's a researcher on human-computer interaction, looking at human biology-computer interaction, more specifically, on the subject of DNA storage. And so a lot of people were talking about like storage on living media, and that's also something you hear a lot also in general, like when you mention storage of information on DNA. But DNA is not alive, it's just a molecule that is inside living things and that is very important for life, of course. But it's not alive, and so I wanted to try to think about a living computer, a living storage system. And so, like, this idea of using these algebras came back to mind, and yeah, and I did it like this. So basically, the main question is, what shape does it take if you want to make something that is alive, and what are the constraints you don't have with other kind of substrates?
So it's almost the seed was planted a period of time ago through one of your science collaborations. Is that right?
Yes. Exactly.
So you're actually studying life science at the moment as well.
Yeah.
Is that shifting some of your perceptions around how you're working? Are you getting a deeper knowledge as an creative around science?
So the way I described, so before studying life sciences, the way I described my art and design practices, and this hasn't changed, by the way, but still I think it's interesting. Basically, I like to say that I'm building a biocomputer or living computers that manipulate organisms through hardware and software. And the reason why I'm doing this is because I want to explore the culture around these things, around computation, around computer science and biology, and our relationship to it in general. So I've been doing this for a while, and then after a while, I wanted to jump the fence and move on the other end of the collaboration. So basically, I was mostly doing this through collaboration with Life Science Labs, and I wanted to be in the lab instead of being the artist in the lab. So I went back to studying, and then I engaged in a program that focuses on synthetic biology. So synthetic biology is a science that takes an engineering perspective onto the life sciences. So basically, the statement is to say that, like, if you want to understand the system, it's best to try to make it. And if you manage to make it yourself, then it means that you recapitulate all of the important parts, and so you understand it well. So synthetic biology is an engineering discipline as well. And I think in my work, where I was before observing more the cultural aspect of this, I'm kind of shifting toward a more engineering perspective. So basically, what kind of technology can you make out of that, and what does it change? And so in this sense, I think it brings me closer to design than arts now, because my understanding of design is, to some extent, the use of technology for making different kind of product and processes. So if you develop new tools, new technological tools, then you can ask the design question, which is, what can you make out of it? Which is cool, which I like.
Yeah, for me, actually, my son trained as an engineer. It's been interesting because essentially it's a design practice. Here's a problem. Let's explore them. Quite often exploring it through a mathematical way of thinking, which is quite often what an artist is working with technology is doing, or a designer that's working with technology. And then testing and prototyping and working through those problems as well. With this particular piece, what was your process?
Mm-hmm. So what do you mean the process, like how to make it, or?
Yeah, because I mean, it's an interesting layering of the algae, and then all of this robotics as well. Do you actually literally plan it all out and have someone else execute it, or are you executing the robotics? Or
so all of my installation I make myself entirely. So the process, basically, so I wanted to do that. I had the rough idea. So you start with literature research. Basically, there's one lab in the UK that works with this organism in the context of biorobotics and information processing in general. It's the lab of Andrew Adamski. It's called the Unconventional Computing Lab, I think. I can find the link. So you start by reading that, you read their methods, you try to understand what they did, you can contact them. So in this case, I haven't been in contact with them for this work, but so you start with that. Then prototypes, of course. So simple prototypes for this involve just having a vase with a like with water and this algae and just turning on and off a light bulb and just putting a camera in front of it and timing everything. I'm looking at how it works. First time it doesn't work because your algae are not well, you need to feed them, you need to, then you go back to the literature, you understand that basically there's a circadian rhythm to this, so this doesn't happen all the time, happens half the day, basically, that kind of things. So you try to debug a little bit the biology, which is the hardest part to me, I think, especially if you have no control, so the only thing you can do is try to understand what people have understand about it before you and then try to adapt your setting. And then once you understand basically the technical requirements for your installation, you can start the robot part. And so the robot part is very classical robotics. There's no magic to it and no special things. So you make a 3D design, you understand all of the parts you need to get, you get them and then you assemble them, you code the robots and then you ship it for exhibition, basically.
Love that term, debugging the organism. That's just a really different way of thinking about it and debugging the algae. The other thing that we're talking, a lot of this type of experimental work, this type of work, never gets past the vase and the light to get it to the spot that you have, which is sort of an exhibition-ready piece, which is sort of interesting because quite often when art's working with technology, those prototypes are just really important to our thinking is probably the best way to put it. Why were you keen to get it beyond that?
I mean, to me, I also see this as a prototype. Like the aspect of it looks finished and polished, but of course it's not ready for being scaled. I cannot make like 100 of it and use it to store more information that could be very useful to our society or whatever. For some people. So I also see it as a prototype, but I think like the shape of it, like its aspects, just like give it a, so for me, it was quite important to, so, like the subject around this is also about the question of the shape, right? So if you make a living computer, what does it look like? How much does it takes on from the shape of traditional classical computers, let's say? What's the difference? So this kind of thing. So yeah, I guess yeah, it was one attempt of making that, but it still fits in the realm of prototypes, I would say.
To the design piece, you do some what I think of as a commercial interaction design work. How is this process different to that type of work for you?
Well, if you do commercial things, you have a client, and then you do what the client wants, basically. So creatively, it's very much different. You have also like very different quality expectations, let's say. So for me, when I do my artistic work, of course, I try to produce things that are highest quality available to me. However, the way I judge quality is not always the same as your client's judge quality when you do commercial work, let's say. Doesn't mean like the clients have higher or me have higher expectations about the work. It's just that I focus on different stuff. So for me, for example, in this installation we've been talking about, quality is about how much does it convey meaning? How much does it tell the story I want to tell? Like basically I will choose the pieces that makes it, or I will design the installation in a way that for me qualify in telling the story mostly, right? And like my experience with client-based work is more about like how much does it shine, how much does it attract people and that kind of things, which are very valid points. I mean, like we need to be aware of why our clients hire us, right? And in this case, it's for this, you know, it's marketing purposes and that kind of things. So it's different goals, different expectations, which lead to different work.
And different process, which is that quality piece as well. So quite often as artists, we just invest time in time that you'd never do if you were actually paying for it. But that's part of why we're doing it as well.
Yeah, it's very true.
Did you have any really big challenges as you're working on the piece, apart from the first prototype not working?
Well, the prototype not working, I think, is part of it, right? Because the extent of control you have on biology is very less compared to the control you can get on digital mechanical systems, let's say. So you need to acknowledge that when you start this kind of process, and accept that your installation is not going to be as reliable. So for example, like we can store 5 bytes message or like word in this device, basically. There's going to be glitches if you consider, if you really want to make an analogy with digital storage. Basically, all of the algae are not going to respond to your signals and that kind of things. I think it's the beauty of it, actually. But so this kind of expectation you have to let go and accept that this is not going to work in the way you've been used to it, basically. But yeah, no, apart from that, I think this installation is a pretty classical robotic installation where all of the pieces that are like the robotic parts are very well characterized and used everywhere in the world, very well documented, and a lot of resources to understand what's not working. But then you always have like the problematics of biology. So living things die. You need to make sure they don't die before your exhibition or during your exhibition. That kind of problematics.
You're talking about the fact that they're not always accurate. They're a lot more like a living human brain than a computer brain. Because our memory, yeah, which is a lovely.
But still, like the human brain is still capable of doing very, very, very accurate things. You know, like think of a dancer or piano player. You know, like just you learn a song. You learn how to play a song on the piano, and sometimes decade later, without having ever used this, played this for like decades. That person is capable of like playing it perfectly well, like remembering it, like even eyes closed or that kind of thing. So the human brain is also like very, very capable of doing very reliable things. The thing is like, if you want, and that's based, by the way, the project I was doing in the US right before here. If you want to use this property of neurons and the brain in a in silico manner, let's say, or at least in an engineering perspective. So let's say if you want to make a computer out of living neurons, then probably recapitulating the functions you can see in animals' brain, like for example, playing the piano, is going to be very, very, very hard. So we're really far from being able to do this. And the reason why is because we just don't understand how the brain is doing it. And then there's also the reason of the tools. Maybe we don't have the tools also to manipulate that, but let's leave that aside and accept that maybe in the near future we'll be able to build the tools. To understand how the brain does it, so you can reproduce that, is a much more complicated story. So in this case, in my case of my installation, so probably it's the same. The reason why it's not reliable is because I don't understand the system. And that's the main difference between biology, or let's say, that's one thing that people need to bear in mind when they do biohybrid device, that kind of things, is then when you have traditional engineered device, basically like computers and robots are objects that are man-made, that we engineered from the bottom up, and that we understand every component of it. When you work with biology, it's completely backward. We didn't engineer biology at all. We just, it's there, and we try to understand what it is, and we understand from the top down, piece by piece. But this means that most of the time, not to say all the times, we're missing a lot of parts to the picture. And so that's why our systems are not reliable. But if you look at organisms in the wild, they do things that are pretty reliable, actually. Like they are working pretty well.
In balance in their own ecosystem extremely well. That actually leads into my last wrap-up question. So if someone did want to get started in living computation, what would be their first step?
So at some point I wanted to make a starter pack. It's a starter pack, but like a website that will, a database basically that will reference papers and means to interact with biology, but this is a project I never had the time to really work on. I think these things are fun, and it's cool to play with digital and bio in the same room. So yeah, definitely learn how to code. learn a little bit of electronics and buy some organisms online and try to see how you can manipulate them. For me, it really helped me to be able to learn scientific paper, to learn how to read scientific paper, sorry. When I started doing that, I didn't have the scientific background I have now. So don't fear on that. Don't shy on that. It's cool to know how to code, basically.
I think you're talking about the scientific papers. There was my first sort of art science thing. The scientist threw a paper at me, and a couple of days later he said, "Did you understand much of it?" And I went, "Oh, about a third of it." And then I spent lots of time searching. Eventually, it was data visualization projects. I eventually actually understood it in my own way, is probably the best way to put it. It's interesting. It was really key in some ways to make sure I was actually starting to understand the language that they were working with.
The thing about science is that it's hard. There's a lot of things to know, but it's accessible. There's internet, like everything else, which I didn't expect it when I started this journey, but like basically you can Google everything you don't know exactly in the same way you would do if you want to learn how to code, right? So,
okay, that's just a really lovely way to wrap up. Thank you for a really great conversation today.
Thanks for having me.
A few highlights from this particular interview for me were when Michael talks about digital technologies being engineered by us, we really fully understand how they work. We know how they're built and thought about. Biology is different. We don't fully understand what it is, and that's where the challenges and possibilities come from. Biology, nature, and being human are messy and not fully understood, and this is often the place where artists work. Michael's first prototype failed, and that was actually a really good thing. I think I realized that sometimes I forget the reason we do prototypes is to actually learn and to learn rapidly. One of my other highlights was right at the end, when Michael talks about dealing with science. As an artist, it's possible to deal with complexities, breaking things down, doing the background reading, looking at examples. I really liked how Michael made the parallel to learning how to code when it came to working with science.
Thank you so much for listening to the Creating New Spaces show. If you got value from this, chances are that other people in your community will. Please share the link to the show with your colleagues and friends, or mention the show on social media.